is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's like the first day of school for most teams around the NFL today. We got vets reporting for 23 teams across the league. By Thursday, every single team will be in action with practices underway. Hi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni, alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive Michael Lombardi. And Michael, I guess we're finally here. Summer is over. Our real day jobs are back.
You bet. We are back. It's good to have you back. And yes, football is back. Rumors flying around, guys sitting in, sitting out, guys not coming to camp, coming to camp. Look, it's football season. We're ready to get going, and I think I'm excited for it. I wrote an article today for VSiN Online. So, yeah, we're back in full swing, Stormy.
Yes, we will get into that because you have a number of questions for all of the teams in the NFC. We'll attack NFC today, get into the AFC a little bit later. Lots of news and notes around the National Football League because guys are going to be talking, teams reporting. We've got some great guests on tap today to go through it all as well, coming up in about a half an hour. VSiN's own Will Hill, host of the Should Have Bet More program, will join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. We'll also have my good friend, Harry Douglas. We used to broadcast the XFL together. He's an ESPN NFL analyst, former wide receiver in the league. Join us at the end of this hour and in hour two. Some college sports talk, Big Ten Media Days underway. Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, will join us there. But let's get started here with the National Football League talk because there are some contracts that are worth discussing as well. The Packers and their QB, Jordan Love, may be nearing an agreement on a contract extension, but until then, he will not participate in practice or any of the preseason games until he gets that done. It is a hold in, so he's going to be around. He'll be in meetings, but not on the practice field. Their GM, Brian Gutekunst, said yesterday, Love's agent did inform the team of their plans, and ESPN's Adam Schefter went on with your boy yesterday on the Pat McAfee show, and he had this to say about Love's contract.
The GM, Brian Gutekunst, is on board with that and saying that they're optimistic about getting the deal done and they understand why he's not practicing. Like, that's a sign that they're trying to get this worked out. I think both sides think they can get it worked out. It's not done. It could go either way still, but I think by the end of the week, my guess would be that Jordan Love will have a new contract that probably makes him one of the, if not the highest paid quarterback in NFL history. Mm. He'll be right there. But they're trying to get that done. It's not done yet. And so the prudent thing is to hold him out.
So Schefter thinking by the end of the week, Jordan Love could be the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League, Michael. And we've talked a lot about how difficult his contract is to do because of the limited sample size he's been the starter.
Right, but the Packers think they are in love, and mm-hmm. they're going to give him the money, and they've offered him a deal that's going to exceed Joe Burrow's deal, which is really, frankly, hard for me to believe. Now, it's going to be a lot of years, too, which, remember, contracts are about length and dollar signs, right? So the longer you go, because of the way the market fluctuates so dramatically, that you want to have a high average on average per year. And apparently this deal is going to be more than Burrow, which I think is going to complicate the Tua deal, which is then going to complicate the Dak Prescott deal. Because in all honesty, Jordan Love doesn't deserve to be the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League by no means at all. And if you really break down, I mean, last year when he had to throw the ball over 40 times in games, his percentage of completion went down to 57%. Like, there were moments where he was very good, not disputing it. But there were moments he was very inconsistent. And if you watch the early part of the season, they did, Matt LaFleur did specifically, everything to make sure Love didn't beat him. I think this is a bold move by the Packers. They love Love, and they're showing it with their dollar sign. I thought they would do a short-term deal, kind of let him grow into it, but the agents have convinced them that this is going to be the deal to end all deals. And now Tua sits back in Miami saying, whoa, wait a minute. I've done way more than Love's done. Where's my coin? And it doesn't sound like Miami has the same sense of love for Tua that the Packers love.
So, Michael,
a lot of love there.
A lot of love. What is the latest that you've heard on the Tua side of things? Because while we've been talking a lot about the Jordan Love contract and the expectation was that he would have this done before we even got here to camp, still fine-tuning a few of those details, but I feel like I haven't really heard a peep from the Tua camp on that side.
Well, they're represented by the same person, right? And so I think to me, the question mark is simply this. How much guarantee are they, the Miami Dolphins, willing to guarantee? Miami really appreciates Tua. But they also understand Tua's limitations, right? Has not won in cold weather. Hasn't beaten very good teams. Hasn't beaten any good teams at all, right? And so they know that. Now, that's not saying they don't want them. They want them, but they want them at the right number. They're not going and moving their chips all the way into the middle of the table like the Packers are for Love. And I think the Packers, you've got to wonder here about the Packers. I mean, they're going all in on this. You know, they've gone all in on their team defensively. You just saw them. They redid Kenny Clark's deal. They paid him. And so this is a team that I think the Packers are telling us, without telling us, just by their actions, that they think they have a chance to compete to be the best team in the NFC. Can they? I mean, I think there's a lot of questions that have to get answered by Green Bay specifically because we're just not sure. I mean, last year you have to really break down their tape. I mean, when they couldn't play run defense, we know that, right? They struggled like crazy to play run defense. And because of that, it became a problem for them to really get control of the game.
And Michael, I like the way you termed things previously in previous shows that we've had about Jordan Love and his season, that it felt like the first half of the year, they were just trying to protect some of the issues that Jordan Love had. And obviously, he stepped up and took his game to a different level the back end of the year. They go 7-2. He's got 21 touchdowns and one pick ahead of that 49ers divisional round playoff loss that they ultimately had. But it's just so hard to give a guy $50+ million when you've really only seen him on the field for one season. Now, obviously, they must believe in what they have seen behind the scenes because he's been in the building for a long time behind Aaron Rodgers. But clearly the belief and the love that they have with Jordan Love is that he's going to be the next in line of great quarterbacks in Green Bay. You have Brett Favre, a 3-time MVP, Aaron Rodgers, a 4-time MVP, and clearly a belief that Jordan Love can be next in line. Now, speaking of Rodgers, of course, there is also news coming out of Jets camp. And no, it is not just that Aaron Rodgers showed up in an Egyptian cat T-shirt, so clearly he's unbothered with the mandatory minicamp miss there. Something that is not a joke, however, is that one of the key cogs that the Jets elected to go out and get this offseason is holding out. And this is what we expected to have happen with Hassan Reddick, is it not, Michael? Because they knew the contract situation coming into this, and now he's not showing up until he gets a deal done.
Yeah, I mean, look, everybody knew Reddick wanted a new deal. Joe Douglas, the general manager, trades for Reddick and doesn't handle the contract before the trade. Like, where is his leadership, right? And so if I'm trading for a player that the Eagles have made it very aware to everybody, he wants a new contract. You don't have to be in some remote land in far east Russia to know that Hassan Reddick wanted a new deal. You knew it. He knew it. He was very out front with it. So if you're Joe Douglas and you trade for this player, you got to make sure he's coming to camp before you tell Howie Roseman we'll make a deal. Instead, he makes the deal. Now, all of a sudden, all the leverage goes back to the player. Now, well, you're going to fine him. Okay, great. But you still don't have the player in camp. Meanwhile, they can't wait to fine Aaron Rodgers, who told them all offseason, look, I'm going to Israel. Here's the deal. All right, if I come to all the OTA days, will that make up for missing the minicamp when I have to go to Israel? Yeah, okay. And then all of a sudden they pivot on that. I mean, it's just one tale after another. I don't know how you could really, honestly. Thomas Gable was on the show yesterday talking about his liability in the book. I don't know how you can bet the Jets with this kind of confusion inside their building led by a man who, once he gets in front of the podium, God only knows what happens.
Leadership from top to bottom, clearly problematic in that building, no question about it. And Reddick, quite frankly, does deserve to be paid more at this point in his career. He has 50.5 sacks over the last 4 years. It's fourth most in the NFL, but his average annual value for his salary ranks in the 20th or so range. So he wants to get paid. He's not going to show up. And I don't know why the Jets are acting like they're surprised about this, because as you said, they knew all of this from his agents and from the media prior to making that trade. And so they move off of Bryce Huff, they bring him in, and now they're in a tough situation. Now, he is going to get fined $50,000 per day. Those fines cannot be waived. But I know we've seen this with other teams in the past, too. They can work that into whatever new deal they give him. But at what point is this going to get done?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the Jets aren't going to redo the deal. They're going to maybe add something to the deal. Like, how couldn't this get done? What are the Jets going to do now that they couldn't do in June?
Exactly.
Why couldn't they just anticipate this? And why couldn't they have said to Howie Roseman, hey, Howie, he's your problem, right? Give me a day to see if I can work out the contract with him. if I can't, he's still your problem. He's not my problem. Instead, they don't franchise Bryce Huff, which we knew the Eagles were going to sign him. You and I both knew that before. They don't franchise him. They give him to the Eagles, and they take the Eagles' problem. Like, you almost think that Joe Douglas is working for Howie Roseman.
Too good. And obviously expectations sky high for this Jets team, despite it being over a decade since they have made the playoffs. It's Super Bowl or bust, it feels like, with Aaron Rodgers and company. And so they need that defense to stand up tall as well. And we'll have to wait and see how things play out there. It's also, in addition to NFL training camps all getting underway, veterans reporting, Big Ten Media Days begin today in Indianapolis. We got ACC Media Days underway already in Charlotte. But with the Big Ten, I'm excited. Later on in the show, Michael, we're going to do a Big Ten Gridiron Goldilocks, and we're going to go through a handful of these teams and see if you think that the expectations and odds are too high, too low, or just right. Today, we're going to hear from Tony Petitti, or we already did, hear from Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti, Ryan Day, others. This is a league that is very interesting. It's a Big Ten, but it's really the Big 18 with the new additions they have from the Pac-12. And Ohio State's got some new competition with Oregon at the top of that odds board. So excited to talk all things NFL and college football over the course of the next 2 hours. We're going to hit the break here first. But when we come back, you yesterday on the show put up a poll at M. Lombardi NFL asking which team will be the NFL's highest scoring offense. So we asked, our audience answered. We're going to dive into that and Michael Lombardi's thoughts on who truly will be the top offense this coming year. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN NFL betting guide is out now, and our all-new college football betting guide is on the horizon, dropping August 1st. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts have expert profiles of each and every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of this month, and you'll receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for our early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires July 31st, so don't wait. Get in there. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Yesterday here on the Lombardi Line, we got on at M. Lombardi NFL, and Michael, you asked our audience which team will be the NFL's highest scoring unit this coming season for 2024-25. The results are in. The Detroit Lions earning 46.3% of the vote, followed by the Miami Dolphins at 29.5%, San Francisco 49ers 18.7%, and the Buffalo Bills at 8.2%. First, let's start with your reaction to the results of this poll. Do you think our audience got it right or wrong? How you feel?
Well, I mean, look, they were the second team in the National Football League in touchdowns scored. But here's the little bit of an issue that I try to talk about in terms of their approach, right? So this is a team that only attempted two field goals over 50 yards all year, okay? And they were 1-for-2 in those field goals. They ranked 32nd in the National Football League, Stormy, in field goal attempts, okay? They had 40 attempts on fourth down. They just were 52% on that, you know? And they ranked second in the National Football League having 2.3 fourth downs per game. So they just dismissed 3 points at will. They don't care. And had they taken some of those points, they probably would have led the league in scoring. They didn't get to 500 points. So that's my biggest concern when it comes to them. Second concern for Detroit is, do they have enough team speed on defense, right? And so when you go through their questions and you look at them, and you see the fact that they only created 16 fumbles all season, which to me is always an indication of how much team speed you had. They've only recovered 7 of them. So they don't turn the ball over with their team speed on defense. They don't kick field goals, which propels you to scoring. Why did Dallas lead the league in scoring? Bland had 5 returns for touchdowns. So I think that's my only concern. But on the surface of just scoring touchdowns, Detroit's a solid play.
They finished 5th in the National Football League in scoring last year. You said it, the Dallas Cowboys were at the top of that list, followed by the Dolphins, 49ers, and Ravens. The Lions, plus 550, the second shortest shot on the odds board behind San Francisco to be the highest scoring unit in the NFL. Now that we have the results from our audience, I want to go through with you, Michael, your top five offenses, who you think will be the highest scoring. And we'll start at five and go up to one from there. At number five, you have the Green Bay Packers. And we were just talking in the last segment a lot about Jordan Love and his contract negotiations that are underway as he's holding in with training camp getting underway. So while he will be around the guys and in meetings, just not on the practice field or participating in any preseason games until he gets that deal done. But you have a little confidence in this Green Bay Packers team that they're going to be able to score.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, they're really good. Look, the thing about the Packers, too, that you have to remember, they're the third best team in the National Football League in sack percentage allowed. I mean, he doesn't get sacked. You know, only Buffalo and Kansas City were better. I mean, this guy can really, they can protect the passer. And the Packers last year were really good. They're third best red zone team in football last year behind Dallas and Baltimore. They were eighth in touchdowns scored. The problem was their field goal kicker wasn't very good. They're 23rd in field goals. I think they could make up for that. Plus the fact if you're going to pay Jordan Love and make him the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League, you better be in the top five in scoring. They can score. There's no really not a weak area of their team. Jacobs is a good back, assuming he can play to the 22 level. Their offensive line can pass protect. They're going to put Jordan Morgan, the kid from Arizona, at right guard. We'll see how that works out. But for the most part, this is a talented offensive team, and I think Halfley will turn the ball over defensively, which is something that they hadn't really done very well last year. They were 30th in forcing fumbles last year in the National Football League.
I think that's a really good point. If we expect Green Bay's defense to be better, Green Bay's offense is going to have the ball in their hands a lot more. At four, you do have the Detroit Lions, and then at three, the Philadelphia Eagles, whose offense obviously was outstanding 2 years ago, took a step back last year. Yeah. You think they'll be back up high this season?
Well, I think with the addition of Barkley, you know, he's a better back than Miles Sanders. The receivers are still good. The tight end's outstanding. I mean, the offensive line, I know they miss Jason Kelce, but they're very good. I can't see any reason why they scored 204 points 2 years ago in the second quarter. I know that Jalen Hurts didn't play well last year, but I do think they have an opportunity if they'll run the football. It's interesting. When you look at Justin Herbert's numbers, and I was working on this today, Stormy, his numbers from last year when he had Kellen Moore to 2 years ago with Joe Lombardi, no relation, the he's now at Denver, they were much better with Lombardi's offense than they were with Moore. I mean, last year, Justin Herbert averaged 17% of his throws were bad. When he was with Lombardi, they only 12%. So if they try to run the ball in Philly, I think they'll be successful and score points. But if they get into that full throw-it mode like Kellen Moore wants to do, it may not be the same team.
At number two, you have the Miami Dolphins and Mike McDaniel, Tua Tagovailoa have a great relationship. Tua, of course, trying to get a deal done as well here. A ton of speed on that offense, and it's not just Tyreek Hill, but you think about Jalen Waddle, Raheem Mostert, Devon Achane. How good can this unit be potentially?
Well, they can, you know, they're hard to play, and you got to be really fast on defense. And even if you're fast on defense, right, you got some problems covering them. I mean, they're really good. The ball comes out quick. Early in the season when they're fresh, I mean, look, they can beat up on some teams. Yeah, they put a 70 spot on the Denver Broncos. Yep. Early in the season. You would think you put a 70 spot on somebody, you're going to lead the league in scoring, and yet they didn't because the second half of the season is hard. I'm a little bit worried about them in the sense that they end the year in Cleveland, on the road in New York. Those two road games, that if they don't score over 20 points in those games, they won't lead the league in scoring.
10-1, their odds to be the highest scoring offense. So in terms of bang for your buck, not bad there. But okay, let's go to number one, the big reveal. Who for you is potentially the top scoring offense in 2024 in the NFL?
I put the 49ers. I could care less about the IU conversation. To me, it's all just media talk. He either shows up or they'll play without him. I mean, they've got three more years on his contract. We had Bucky Brooks on yesterday, and Bucky was the same thing. It's like, yeah. At some point, when will somebody realize that he has no leverage? Like, we're not the NBA. He's not James Harden. He's not going to demand a trade and get away with it. He's going to miss time. He's going to get fined. The 49ers are not going to let him sit in, I can tell you that. So either show up or don't show up and get fine and move on with life. they'll move on without him. But here's the thing, the key for me why the Niners could be better is Jake Moody, their kicker. You know, he wasn't great towards the end of the year last year.
No, he was not.
I think if he gets through those, if he gets through those hiccups and he becomes the kicker he was at Michigan, they could be, because you know Kyle's not going to chance it. Kyle's going to take the points. You know that. Yep.
No, I'm in agreement with you. And I, every time, honestly, as we got to the back end of the year, when a game was on the line or you needed those 3 points in a critical moment, I did not have the confidence that I needed. I told you how many weeks in a row I am moody about Moody. And I even remember in the NFC title game against Detroit when he went, I was just, all right, it's going to be a miss. It's going to be a miss. And he ended up coming in the clutch in that game when they needed it to. My concern, Michael, and I'm curious if you agree, about the 49ers offense is the way they operate when trailing in games. And you think about that NFC title game, they ended an 0-for-30 streak, I want to say, when trailing by 7 or more points in the fourth quarter to come back and win that game. When they trail, Kyle Shanahan does not play as confident as we're accustomed to seeing early on in games.
No question. And why is that, Storm? It's a great question, but why is that? Because he's not built to play from behind. His offensive line, if they have the drop back pass all the time, it's not good enough. That he knows it. I know it. Everybody in the league knows it. This is a play action pass team that has to run the football to be effective. That's going to be the key to them. They have to have that action in their game plan. If they don't, it won't work because, you know, they need it to be able to separate the defense, to help the offensive line, to help them get into their protection and do all those things. But once they get into a drop back pass game, then all of a sudden it becomes really a problem. And I think ultimately that's what happens. So when they get behind, it's hard for them to throw it to catch up.
Yeah, they're not a team you want to live bet in the fourth quarter if they're down, that's for sure. High expectations, though, for the San Francisco 49ers team, who ultimately lost to the Chiefs in last year's Super Bowl. They're the second shortest shot to win it again, second only to that Chiefs team. Win total 11.5. They're the lone team in the NFL this year that is favored in each and every one of their games. As for the highest scoring offenses, they're the favorite there at 5-1, followed by the Lions at +550, Buffalo 9-1, Miami 10-1, and the Dallas Cowboys, who led the league in scoring last year, also 10-1. One along with the Eagles. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, let's get Will Hill's thoughts on this, okay? Because we know he's in charge of everything anyways. We'll find out who he thinks will be the highest scoring unit and how he approaches training camp time as a bettor from the futures market. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
July is ending with a bang, ladies and gentlemen. UFC 304 has not just won, but two titles on the line. You can get your own crown when you jump in on all of the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5 only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Often in UFC, you hear, that's a bad man. But as we shift gears to the NFL, for our next guest, we say, that boy bad, as we welcome in Harry Douglas on the Progressive Guest Line, former NFL wide receiver, ESPN NFL analyst. You can also catch him each and every weekday on ESPN Radio as the co-host of Freddie and Harry. Harry Douglas, my former XFL broadcast partner as well. How are we doing today?
Stormy, I don't think you could have introduced me any better way, because that boy is bad. And it's always great to be able to do anything with you, Stormy. You know how much I love you. You're such a pro at everything that you do, and you are only scratching the surface. What you have in store in your future is going to be way more massive than what you already are doing right now.
Michael, I didn't expect Harry to try to make me cry when we got on here, but very nice of you, Harry. Yeah,
well,
we appreciate you.
I mean, you need Harry every day.
I know.
And this is impressive.
My own built-in hype man here.
The man is speaking the truth. I'll give him that. He's not lying. If I thought he was lying, I'd call him out, but he's speaking the truth. He's doing well.
I love
Keep
you guys. My ego is going to just blow up after this. So thank you guys very much. I appreciate you. Let's get into a little bit of football, though. And speaking of that boy bad, let's talk some wide receivers here off the top, because you know I am a 49ers fan, Harry, and I am very stressed out about this Brandon Ayuk situation. How are you feeling about how things are going to play out in that wide receiver room for San Fran?
Well, I'll say this. If you're San Francisco, you're saying to yourself, if you want to contend for a Super Bowl this year or try to get back to where you were last year, you're going to need Brandon Ayuk. When you look at this roster, he is the most complete wide receiver. And what I mean by that, he is the guy that can line up at the X receiver or line up anywhere else, take on the number one corner, and run routes efficiently. Be able to run the route tree. When you look at the explosive plays, he was a major part of majority of the explosive plays that San Francisco had throughout through the air. So if you have a guy in Brock Purdy who's going into his third season, and we know at some point Brock Purdy is going to want his money probably after this year, you want to keep that weapon that Brock Purdy has been able to utilize at his disposal.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, but but Brandon Ayuk has no leverage. I mean, he's under contract. They own the franchise right for two more years. He can do all the complaining he wants. He's going to come in. They need him, and he needs them, because I think that's the only way that's really going to come through, Harry. So let's switch it over to CeeDee Lamb. What do you think is going to happen with Dallas? I think Dallas is in the same situation. They want to sign CeeDee Lamb. He's got a fifth year of his contract. What do you think happens there?
Let me tell you the difference between CeeDee Lamb and Brandon Ayuk to me. When I look at
I love it.
When I look at San Francisco, everything is based off their run game. And when you look at Deebo Samuel, when you look at George Kittle, and you look at Christian McCaffrey, they are also major factors when it comes to the run game. That's not Brandon Ayuk. He's a major contributor when it comes to the pass game, although he hustles downfield and gets blocks for his teammates. Now, when I look at the Dallas Cowboys, after the San Francisco game last year, Mike McCarthy said, you know what, we need to feature CeeDee Lamb more and make him the major focal point of our offense. And that's what he was. When you look at from the receptions to the yardage, he surpassed Michael Irvin last season. When you talk about a single season in Cowboy history, he's number one in that category now. He was second in the NFL in receiving yards. He was first when it came to yards after the catch. Everything is so revolved around CeeDee Lamb and that offensive system in Dallas. I'm saying to myself, if he's not on that roster or if he's not on the football field, who was the number one guy? Who was the opposing team's defensive coordinator going to be nervous and scared of? And I'll go ahead and answer that for both of y'all. No one. So if I'm Dallas, I'm making sure that I have CeeDee Lamb. And him and Dak Prescott, they were able to make, wonderful music last season. And I like those guys coming back this season and being able to, you know, light up the NFL again for a second year in a row.
ESPN NFL analyst Harry
Brandon
Douglas
Cooks is going to be really mad at you. Harry, Brandon Cooks is going to be really mad at you. I mean, he's going to be furious at you. You just disrespected him. I mean, he's still on the team, and, you know, he still makes plays. I think even though he's 30 years old, don't you think he's still a contributor to what they want to do? He caught 54 passes last year.
Yeah, but when we talk about a number one wide receiver and we're talking about a focal point of your offense, a guy that you know can go win one-on-one every time and you expect him to win every time, in my opinion, that is CeeDee Lamb. That's not Brandon Cooks.
Harry Douglas, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us here on the Lombardi line. Michael, go ahead.
No, I don't disagree with you on that. I just think, to me, you know, there's only one number one receiver. There's maybe five number one receivers in the whole league, let alone having two on a team. So I'm just saying, I think, look, they need CeeDee Lamb. I agree completely. I think the biggest question mark comes down to what, you know, does he get the 30? Is Justin Jefferson's deal 35 or is it 32? It's 32 in old money. It's 35 in new money. I think that's the question. So I think that's really the question. Let's shift to Jordan Love. You know, there's pretty much a reliable source. Jordan Love will be the highest paid player in the National Football League at quarterback. What's your thoughts on that?
I think if you're Brian Gutekunst, the GM for the Green Bay Packers, you have to do this deal. When you look at Jordan Love, and I know he didn't start off phenomenal. They went 2-5 in the first seven games, but what he did in his last 12, over 2,500 yards, 26 touchdowns, to five interceptions. But it's also, for me, being able to throw off every and any platform. If the play breaks down, the ability to be able to improvise and still make things happen when they're not supposed to happen, or the textbook tell us this play is supposed to be dead. He goes into Dallas and he's throwing one-legged fadeaways to his receivers like we've seen Dirk Nowitzki do at American Airlines Arena when he was playing basketball there. But it's also during that 12-game stretch, you look at the quarterback that he went through. You talk about a Patrick Mahomes. He went through a Jared Goff. He went through a Matthew Stafford twice, and he went through Dak Prescott. So I really like the game of Jordan Love. And now being able to have that phenomenal running back in Josh Jacobs, a guy who was able to be number one in the league in rushing a few years back, I think those two are going to complement each other very, very well. I like their young skill position core. They had an opportunity a season ago to be able to grow together throughout the duration of the season and also making the playoffs. I think those things are going to carry over. And I'll say, if you look at Green Bay, what's key for them this year, in my opinion, number one, Jordan Love starting fast. But number two, can Jeff Hafley have the same effect that we've seen the Jim Schwartz have on the Cleveland Browns last year? Because they have talent on the defensive side of the ball. It's about them being consistent week in and week out. But I'm a believer in Jordan Love, and he has an opportunity this season to even, you know, make more plays and scratch the surface a little bit more. But if you're Green Bay, you want to get ahead of the curve. You don't want Jordan Love to go out there and have an MVP-like season, and now you got to pay him $60 million a year.
When it comes to the Jeff Hafley side of things, you're certainly speaking Michael's language there. That's a unit that needs to improve, and hopefully he can be a big part of that. Harry, a big theme of our show this hour today has been who might be the highest scoring offense in the NFL this coming year. And we talk about the Cowboys. They had the highest scoring offense last year, the 49ers as well. They're the favorites this year in that market. When you think about which unit could really put up numbers, is there an offense that really stands out to you in that vein?
I'm going to go with second-year offensive play caller Bobby Slowick in Houston and C.J. Stroud in his second year at the quarterback position. And I think getting Joe Mixon was huge for this football team, and also bringing in a Stephon Diggs, because normally in that offensive system, it may take year two or year three for the quarterback to fully grasp what's going on. C.J. Stroud was able to do it in his rookie season. So he's already ahead of the curve. So now you expect that run game to be more valuable and be more of an assist to C.J. Stroud. They have three number one wide receivers. When you look at Tank Dell, Nico Collins, and what he was able to do when Tank Dell got hurt, and now you add in a Stephon Diggs, you have Dalton Schultz, a security blanket at the tight end position. So I really like the Houston Texans in their offense. And one of the things that we know about C.J. Stroud is that he has that clutch gene. If the game is on the line, you can count on him to go down and make the play to either score a touchdown or put his offense in position to kick a game with a field goal.
C.J. Stroud also, by the way, Harry, one of the favorites to be the MVP this year. We've only got about 30 seconds, but does that surprise you to hear that he's thought of in that vein from a betting perspective?
No, because I covered him in college, and I've seen how he played the quarterback position from the pocket. And a lot of people was complaining about him, running more. But, hey, he's a pocket guy. He plays on time. He plays on script. And if he has to improvise, he has the ability to be able to do that. But he's always keeping his eyes downfield, trying to make a play. And I'll tell you this, their schedule is harder this year. And if they can go in an eight-game span, 6-2 or 5-3, he has a chance to win MVP.
Keep crushing it, Harry. Thanks for your time. We appreciate
you. Thank you, Harry. Appreciate you. Thank you.
No, thank y'all.
Harry Douglas, kind enough to join us fresh off the First Take desk today. Awesome stuff from him. Patrick Mahomes, your favorite as the MVP, but C.J. Stroud right there, second shortest shot, plus 850. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved mobile-friendly VSiN.com each and every day on the website. Best bets from all of our show hosts, experts, and analysts. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including columns from our own Michael Lombardi each and every week throughout the football season. A new one up today. The biggest questions on teams in the NFC. Also betting tools, betting guides, and so much more. Head to VSiN.com today. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we switch gears and get into a little college football talk here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel, now contributor for SEC Unfiltered, joins us here on the Lombardi Line on the Progressive Guest Line. Dave, how are you today? Thanks for spending some time with us.
Hey, good. So I appreciate you and Mike having me. How's everything going with y'all?
Great. Michael has just been raving about you in the commercial break. So, Michael, why don't you take us off here?
Well, I think the guide's incredible. I think anybody who wants to get caught up on college football, along with our betting guide, Dave's guide, is tremendous. It goes through all the key roster addition players, and then it also has the top high school recruits that you're going to see. So you get a great balance. Let's start off with the Southeast Conference. If I were to say to you, I think Jalen Milroe's undervalued, would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, I would 100%. Yeah, if we were going to talk future Heisman or anything, I think he would be in that, Mike, just because I think his Kalen DeBoer's done quarterbacks. When I was at UCF, we were thinking about taking Michael Penix. He was coming off those injuries at Indiana, the shoulder, and I think he had the knee. And we didn't know if we could really do anything with him. He goes to Washington, comes down to us, see what Kalen DeBoer did with him. I thought that was incredible what he did with some of his guys at Fresno State. I think that Mike hit the hammer on the head with it. I think I expect to have a year with him entering first Kalen DeBoer next year.
And he is a 15-1 shot to win the Heisman Trophy this year, the sixth shot on the odds board. When you left hearing all the SEC media days, coaches, players, everybody talking, I'm just curious from your standpoint last week, was there any team that your mind got changed about from hearing from all these coaches and players?
Stormy, I think that's a good question. I would probably say probably twofold here. Question. I love the confidence with Sark in them at Texas. I feel like he came in. First of all, his Coke game was incredible. I'm not a big orange guy, but the Coke game was awesome. I like Texas's mentality. I think they're embracing that, hey, like, we are coming to the league. We're going to be hunted. But if there's a team from a, I think it's floating in that mid-range of the SEC, I think everybody kind of has Texas in that top four. Probably Tennessee. I mean, I like what they did with Nico Amalabay at the quarterback position. If they can figure out some depth at the running back position, they brought in Tulane transfer Chris Brazell, who's going to do a good job there. Squirrel White, Brew McCoy being back. Because, you know, they run a bunch of those tunnel screens. It's essentially an extension of their run game. So Brew McCoy being hurt last year, he was a big physical guy. Squirrel White, a slot guy, he can't block in the perimeter. I think Brew McCoy coming back will help. I think they may have one of the top three defensive fronts in the league. I mean, they probably have, heading into the season, the best defensive player in James Pierce. I think he's going to get a lot of doubles, which will help the other DN, Joshua Josephs over there, redshirt freshman. I think he's going to have a big year. If Keenan Peely, their BYU inside backer, stays healthy, who got hurt last year, Tennessee's going to have one of the better fronts. Rodney Garner is one of the better defensive line coaches. Was at Georgia when David Pollack was there, Auburn when Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson was there. He's always coached big-time guys up front. He's got that level of guys there. There are question marks in the secondary, like it's been. I mean, Jermaine McCoy, the transfer from Morgan State, is probably going to man it. But listening to Josh Heupel, you can tell he talked about that secondary a little bit more optimistically than he had in the past. Again, I don't think it's going to be some lockdown secondary that potentially Ohio State has, but I think it can be serviceable. So I'm a little bit higher on Tennessee. I think they're at that 9-3, 10-2 mark. I feel probably a little bit more confident in them after leaving media days.
All right. There's nobody. I mean, Ohio State spent a ton of money, and we know certainly that some other schools, but no one's really probably could compete with Ole Miss and what Lane's been able to do there. And we really won't know how good Ole Miss is until they travel to LSU in late October. But where do you think LSU? I know in your guide you have them only losing one game to Georgia, and their schedule is really fairly easy. Like I said, LSU on the road's tough. They got to go home against Oklahoma. They go to Arkansas. Georgia they have at home, which gives them an advantage. So where do you see them, and do you think they'll make 12? You think they'll make the playoffs?
Yeah, Mike, to answer your question, I think Ole Miss and Missouri, out of the true contenders, have the most beneficial, probably Texas you could throw in there, but truly Ole Miss and Missouri have the beneficial schedules that the other teams in the league have. I mean, I think the stars aligned for Ole Miss this year. They went all in on the portal. They got more depth on the offensive line than they've had probably in my lifetime up there. I mean, they added two Washington transfers, the Diego Pounds, and the name escapes me for the other one. Jeremy James has played every position on the offensive line except center. He's fighting for a starting spot. Jackson Dart's in his third year with Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. Brought in Juice Wells. I know he was out for South Carolina last year, but probably one of the more productive receivers in the league 2 years ago. Jordan Watkins is back. They had Trey Harris back. They had a big year from La Tech. I think Quinshon Judkins was good. I don't think that's going to be as big of a loss as a lot of people are talking. I like Ulysses Bentley, the kid they had last year. He's back. If you go back and look at his 2020 season with SMU, when Sonny Dykes and them were there, the COVID season, I think that's what you're going to see. I think he's going to be close to 1,000 yards, similar to Trevor Etienne at Georgia, the Florida transfer. He's going to be used a lot out of the backfield. And I think Ole Miss up front on defense has as much depth as anybody, probably outside of Georgia and maybe a little bit Texas. If they stay healthy, if Ole Miss can go win that LSU game at Tiger Stadium, I have a hard time seeing them losing three out of their last seven. I mean, the toughest game, and I think the team that's kind of on that fringe in the SEC, it could affect a lot of teams' schedule, whether good or bad, is Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma, on paper, if they can get the offensive line figured out, should be pretty good this year. But they're on a lot of the contender schedule. They play Alabama, they play Ole Miss, they play Texas, they play Missouri. Depending how Tennessee, I mentioned, they play that's the first conference game for both teams. If Oklahoma can get it figured out, that makes some team schedules harder. If they're in that 6-6, 7-5 range, it'll be interesting. But to answer your question, Mike, I think Ole Miss is firmly in the playoffs. I think it's wild to say if Ole Miss doesn't make the playoffs, it would be a very disappointing year in Oxford.
Our producer Elliot will kill me if I don't ask you about the Missouri Tigers. And as you talk about schedules, their schedule and the teams they avoid could set up really nicely for Mizzou if they play to the caliber that they did last year in an 11-win season. How are you evaluating Eli Drinkwitz's squad?
Yeah, so my good question. I like Missouri, especially in offense. They really benefited off it. They didn't have a lot of injuries up front last year. I like Armand Membo, the right guard. I think he's one of the better offensive linemen. They got a Oklahoma transfer, Caden Green. It's going to be one of those tackle spots for them. Brady Cook, I see some people ranking him as a top quarterback in the league. I don't know if I believe that, but he is a good product of Eli Drinkwitz, Kirby Moore's system. Luther Burden, I think, is the guy that's probably going to have the best shot out of all nine quarterbacks to win the Heisman this year. The way they line him up outside, inside, in the backfield, they've used him as Wildcat before. He's going to get touches. The question isn't on offense for me for Missouri. I think they're going to be really good on offense. The question is going to be defense. You lost your best players at all three levels. Corey Batoon, the new DC, is coming in from South Alabama. They lost three coaches all to LSU: Blake Baker, Kevin Peoples, and their safety coach forget his name off the top of my head. But they're all at LSU now. So on defense, you lost probably your best three players at all three levels, and you're replacing three out of your four coaches. You could maybe take a step back. Stormy, to your point, their schedule is as manageable as possible. Circle that Kyle Field game, maybe October 12th off the top of my head. They're similar to how I mentioned the Ole Miss game against LSU. If they win that game, I don't know if I see them losing three of the last seven. And I keep saying the three of the last seven for people listening. If you go 10-2, I think there's a good shot. Now, we have a lot of 10-2 teams in the SEC. Some people are projecting that. That could hurt Ole Miss and Missouri because the strength of schedule is not going to be there. But I think if Missouri goes and wins at Kyle Field or October 12th, I mean, they got Oklahoma left. They do go at Alabama. But say they lose to Alabama, I think they would still have to go lose two more. I still think Oklahoma is that swing team in the league. They're not going to really compete for the league, I think, this year. I like what Brent Venables and them are doing, but I think they are going to have a say in who wins it.
Yeah, Dave, we have about 2 minutes left. Oregon have a chance to beat Ohio State in the Big Ten?
Shoot, Mike, I think they may play three times this year. We actually have that in our magazine. I can see them playing in the regular season, Big Ten title, and in the college football playoff. Yeah, I think they could. The big question mark for me with Oregon, I know he's got one of the higher Heisman odds. I was with him at UCF. Dylan Gabriel, does he kind of have, for a lack of a better term, the kids use these days, kind of that – does he have that dog in him, for a lack of a better term? That's can he play through injury? That was always kind of our issue there, like kind of forcing him to play when he wasn't 100%. As we all know, you're not 100% the first day you put on the pad for practice. After that, you're not 100%. He's my question mark. They lost some guys on defense, but I do like what Dan Lanning and them are doing. I think they could get Ohio State once. That first game's at Autzen Stadium. I would lean Oregon probably wins that game. But I think ultimately Ohio State is the class of the league. I mean, I think the Big Ten's Ohio State, Oregon gap, and let's see what Penn State and Michigan do after that.
Yeah, that's a pick 'em game where things sit right now. Dylan Gabriel, by the way, plus +750 favorite. He leapfrogged Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers in the Heisman Trophy odds. 20 seconds with you. There's a prop here in Vegas. Ohio State and Georgia versus the field to win a national championship. It's the same odds each way. Who would you take?
I feel confident Georgia or Ohio State. One of them wins it.
Really?
Against the field. The other three contenders I'd probably throw would be I'd probably throw Oregon in there. Oregon, Ole Miss, and Texas would be the other ones. But I feel confident in the field. This is an NCAA basketball tournament. Depth will matter. And even in the playoffs with potentially 17 games, I like the two teams with the best depth.
That music is telling me we got to wrap it up.
Great
but
job,
thank
David.
You so much for your time. And we will
Great
be
job.
Bugging you again this college football season.
Appreciate y'all. Thanks for having me on.